if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 358. This is our 2025 US Open Tips podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanran. Join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's Oakmont Major action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information and, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have my 2025 US Open betting preview plus Paul's long shot preview, our US Open research article with key trends and course information. Paul has been busy in the stats lab pulling together masses of data. Recent major championship performance rankings, they're well worth a look. We've also got various form table sheets, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for the US Open. All of our content and data is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. There is no registration. We're available on X. You can follow us. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. We're on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. We've got one here from Michael Paper Chaser, and Michael is in Ohio. Hello, Michael. My favourite Tuesday morning podcast, five stars. Writing in all the way from Youngstown, Ohio. Every Tuesday, I look forward to listening to all the statistics, trends and picks that help me choose my one and done selection for the week. Finished third last year in a contest of over 300 people and tracking for another good year this season. Keep up the good work. And yes, that's from Michael from Ohio. Thanks for your time, Michael.
Brilliant. Thanks, cheers, Michael. Yeah, and good luck with your one and done league. Hopefully we can guide you in the right direction to move you up that table.
Packed show. Paul landed an 80-1 Ryan Fox winner at the Canadian Open last week. Well done, Paul.
Yeah, thanks. It was 80s early on Monday. I think by the time we recorded, he was down to 66s. But yes, he, well, I don't know, a few more grey hairs for me. It's never particularly easy, is it, to get a player over the line. I thought he was done, to be honest. We've seen it before with Fox, you know, and for the wins that he's had over on the DP World Tour, and there's been some really impressive ones. There's been a fair few where he's gotten himself in position going into Sunday and it's just not happened. And it was kind of a pedestrian round and until he managed to find a little bit towards the end of the 18. Had to make that 16-footer on the last to make the playoff and then
Wow. Dodged
a few more bullets in the playoff. Until he hit that fantastic shot on the final playoff hole to about 7 feet, which put the pressure on and ultimately did the job. So, yeah, I'm really pleased to get him over the line. And mainly for the logic, really, because it was a case of, well, if you look back through his history, he's got this tendency just to produce form in, you know, short, sharp bursts and then drop off a little bit. So his win at Myrtle Beach was a good pointer, and three starts later, he does it again. Huge for him, you know, career-wise.
Massive.
To get two PGA Tour wins in the space of a few weeks is massive.
He's now guaranteed PGA Tour. He's guaranteed PGA Tour golf now for 2025, rest of, 2026, 2027, and 2028.
Mm.
Yeah. So good, but this is the big. This one comes with a Masters invite as well. Like, it's the full status, big win, a national open.
Yep.
It's a big moment in his career. Great pick, Paul.
Cheers.
That's just a thing maybe I have in my head about players not of the super elite category not being able to pick off multiple wins in a short space of time.
Yeah. That's the reason I didn't go for him. I didn't think, he's won a couple of weeks ago. He's not going to win two in the short space of time, and then bang.
Yeah, he might be a different breed.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd expect him to go off the boil from here because with those two wins, that's, it was certainly job done for the season for him. What else has he got to prove? Yeah, he's got the remainder of the year. And he'll play tournaments both sides of the Atlantic, I expect. And should he go forward and win more from here, then, I expect we need to start recategorising where he actually is in the hierarchy of the golfing world. But, yeah, in the short term, he's got to enjoy those two wins because they're absolutely massive.
Up to 25 in the FedEx Cup, so that could be something that keeps him interested, whether he can get to the Tour Championship, which is always a goal of these top pros.
Yeah. It won't take massive amount from here, will it? It's, one or two fairly decent finishes from here, and he should be in.
Followed the mantra, didn't it? No one between 14-1 and 50-1 has won the Canadian Open since 2010. And you got an early 80s and he went off generally 66s. So that tournament is so binary. It really is. It's either a mid-priced player with a bit of form, which clearly he had, or it's one of the top guys. Ludvig Åberg was the only one for me that made the cut. And he actually ended up, I think he was five back of the lead, and he shot a quad on Friday on a par three.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
So he'd have been one off the lead without that.
Yeah, and there were periods of time where he made little bursts of little runs where you thought actually he could get himself into the mix here and flirted with the lead and then just dropped back again.
Indeed.
Didn't quite happen. I don't think he's far off, Ludvig. I don't think he's far off at all. I think there's something that's is percolating with him, and don't be too surprised if he gets over the line in an event over the next few weeks, months.
Travellers could be interesting for him.
Mm.
He's an accurate driver, isn't he?
Yep.
Isn't he?
Our pro in Carn last weekend, Andrew Hickey, told a story of him playing against Ludvig a few years ago in an amateur event. And he said, I beat him. And I went, oh, really? And he goes, yeah, in round one. And then he absolutely smoked me the rest of the week. So he said even then you could tell how unbelievable he was.
Different level. I expect he was really young at the time as well then. Probably been a teenager, yeah. Wouldn't he? Wow.
That's well done, Paul.
In your cap.
You're on a good run with these results. The podcast is landing some winners after a fallow period early on in the year. So congratulations. Let's hope we can snare the US Open winner this week. I'll quickly run you through the Ryder Cup standings. Absolutely no change for Team USA. Scheffler, Xander, DeChambeau, Thomas, Morikawa, Henry, Autos. Griffin, McNeely, English, Novak, Harman, Cantlay. Europe, slight change. McIlroy, Lowry, Sepp Straka, Rasmus Højgaard. He seems to be finding a little bit of form, Højgaard, a little bit more visible in Canada. Hatton, Fleetwood, Autos. Ludvig Åberg, Rose, Dietrich. He was a bit more visible again in Canada. Matt Wallace at 10, McIntyre 11. He gains one place over Niklas Norgaard, who missed the cut. So that's where we are in terms of Ryder Cup qualification. Right, US Open this week. I must say I'm rather licking my chops, although I always say that until about Thursday afternoon, and all of mine are plus five after nine holes. So we'll see where this one lands.
Steve, that might be the lead at that stage. Could be okay.
Yeah, it could be.
That's fair comment. Time to announce another golf betting system bet boost for the US Open. We've got really creative with this one. We have an exclusive Scotty Scheffler bet boost available with Bet365. There is a link in the podcast description, which takes you through to the boost at the top left of the Bet365 homepage. Get over 3-1 on Scotty Scheffler. He's currently 13-4 with our bet boost. He's as short as 5-2. I'm even seeing 12-5 out there. The boost is available, win only, or in their 8 places each way market. Price quoted is correct at the time of podcast recording. You will always get that boost via our exclusive golf betting system boost link. I don't actually see him getting backed in this week. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, Scheffler, is that because his price is so short already? How can it get any shorter?
Yeah, they're just scaring you off backing him, aren't they?
Yeah. 3-1 seems to be the absolute limit, doesn't it? And the regular markets that are out there. And as soon as he hits 3-1, he seems to be getting hammered on that particular bookie. So I think there's enough big hitting punters out there who've got that as their target number and are just kind of siphoning it off every time it appears. And yeah, a lot of the bookies going shorter, as you say, in the kind of 5-2, 11-4 bracket, somewhere in around that region, which is kind of veering on Tiger-esque type numbers, isn't it?
Yeah.
From back in the day.
Currently 13-4 with our bet boost with Bet365. If you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their bet £10, get £30 in free bets. New customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Don't forget to use the bonus code. Paul, what is the bonus code?
It is SPORT30, SPORT30.
When registering. Okay. As ever, Major, we have done a Major Research podcast. It is 357. It's the one that's directly in front of this. Give it a listen. Go into trends. Paul's trends are excellent. Barry's feedback on the course. Also some details there around what kind of skill sets we think will flourish. Well worth a listen. The course itself this week is an absolute beast. I'm enjoying, as ever, watching the videos of players finding the thickest rough that they can find. I mean, Bryson in his video on his YouTube channel was an absolute con. He was literally walking off the 11th tee and he was walking down the runway and he's literally walked 30 yards off the tee and dropped the ball in the thickest rough. And he's going, oh, this US Open rough, it's mean. And you're thinking to yourself, well, if one of you pros topped the ball and hit it to that point there, They've clearly got problems. I don't think they're winning the US Open if they get the ball into that particular bit of grass.
That's like a shot we'd play, Steve.
Exactly. I'd like to think the 156 players in this field will not be topping the ball into that spot. So, yes, that was absolute clickbait from Bryson. But 5-inch... minimum rough on this golf course, and it's thick. It's Kentucky bluegrass, it's perennial rye, throw in a bit of poana as well. Fairways of bent grass with poana. The actual greens themselves are Pennsylvania, West Pennsylvania, poana, yes. I saw a board the other day that was quoting that the greens were running on the course at 16 on the stimp. They've got a board there that says what the stimp is, and it said 16.
Yeah, and that's on the flat. They get it slightly downhill, then it's going to be even more.
I wonder, will any player try take a wedge for some of these downhill or cross green shots this week to try slow it down with spin?
Maybe. If the angles are right, then yeah. If their angles are wrong and they need to do something a bit different. But yeah, as you say, if you're on the wrong side of the green and you've got a truly treacherous putt, then maybe it'll ask the question.
A lot of these greens are raised. This does remind me of that Tillinghast course at Philadelphia Cricket Club the other week. A lot of these greens are raised. They're huge. 8,500 square feet. But they have a lot of these sort of runway strips that, so it's fairway into run up into green, and that run grass is virtually indistinguishable from the green itself. So I think there is an element here where you can run balls up onto green surfaces. Whether you can get it to stop, that's a completely different kettle of fish. But there is a links-type feel to it to a certain extent with a lot of these holes, where a lot of the PGA Tour, it's basically aerial. You've got to throw the ball in the air. The front of the green is not accessible from the, you know, along the ground. But with a lot of these holes, they actually are. And I suppose that's to give people a sort of chance if they're thick in this rough that's 5.5, 6 inches and they've missed the fairway by 4 yards.
Yeah.
We were talking about this off mic. I'm not going to go any more into the course. If you want to go into course detail, there's so much content out there, and there's various people hacking around the course last week. You can watch all that. What we need to do, guys, is try and work out how do we get Scottie Scheffler beat this week? Because it's as simple as that. Does Scottie win or does Scottie not win? And, you know, I haven't been shy in backing him at 3-1 in a couple of events this week. I have not backed him for the US Open. I think there is a path where he does get beat. I'm hoping. And that path is, it's the path that you said on the research podcast, Parry. It's the path that Scottie gets upset. He misses a fairway by 3 yards. He walks into the rough. He sees that he's been absolutely screwed, and he makes a six.
Yeah, doesn't get it out the first time. That just gets the pressure, the steam going from beneath the collar.
And then it's that we need it to be this golf course isn't fair mentality. And if we saw that at Pinehurst, completely different track. We saw some of that at the PGA in round one, mud balls. This is another thing. There's been so much rain here. Is there a situation where we're going to be getting mud balls on Thursday on these fairways? Yeah, we need something to get rid of his world number one mental equilibrium where he's completely non-fussed by all of it.
Yeah, and the fact that he's clearly the best player in the world by some stretch at the moment. In terms of the weather, it doesn't look like it's going to be particularly wet going forward, does it? There's, I know, as you say, and I think you alluded to in your preview, or it was the preview pod, that there'd been an awful lot of rain in the area for the last few months, but it looks like it's just about cleared up, doesn't it, for the 4 days of tournament play.
Well, listen to this. We recorded the research pod last Friday. There was another 21 millimetres, so that's 0.9 of it, or 0.84 of an inch. Saturday, 18 millimetres, 0.72 of an inch. Sunday, 5 millimetres, 0.2 of an inch. And Monday, 5 millimetres, 0.2 of an inch. So that golf course has had 50 millimetres of rain in 9 days in June. That's almost 2 inches. And the greens are still firm and fast.
Yeah, and they will be.
So do not think in what... Do not think that at any point these greens are really going to become receptive. I don't see it being... Do you remember Wing Foot many years ago? And the first round, didn't Patrick Reed shoot 6 or 7 under? And we were all like, we were told that these greens were going to be like glass. Mm. And they were throwing darts into pins on the Thursday at Wing Foot. Don't see that here. I've seen enough footage of the greens already to suggest that they're absolutely... And don't forget, this has got sub-air.
Yep.
Yeah. Wherever those generators are, they must be noisy. They're literally 100%. sucking every living piece of moisture out of those greens.
Yeah, but then if there's no significant rain between now and then, they're going to be able to get that course absolutely to the level that they want, particularly around the greens and on the greens. It will just, the question will be, as you alluded to, is what will the fairways be like? Will they be, because when they're firm and fast, they're going to be, you know, running 30, 40 yards. Are they going to be like that? Because if they are, then that puts a premium on accuracy, because people will be inevitably rolling straight into the rough if that's if there's enough of that roll on the greens or on the fairways. Yeah.
That to me, Paul, is a big question mark between now and Thursday.
Mm.
It might require a tweak or maybe holding back a euro or two to place a bet on a guy who right now wouldn't be one, but if the fairies do get firm and fast, then they might bring a couple more options into it.
Yeah. Yep.
I think this is it. I think, and this sounds ridiculous, but for me, the most critical part of this week and getting your team right are there going to be fairways here where there is serious roll on them? Because the way that we distinguish the field here, thick rough clearly means that everybody's going to be in it at some point. If those fairways are soft, that is an advantage to the... I know it sounds ridiculous, but that is then an advantage to the shorter hitters who can be hitting more fairways. Where the shorter hitters are then going to struggle is, if you've got fairways that have loads of roll, bearing in mind some of these fairways are only 18 yards wide, if you've got fairways where everybody's starting to miss lots of fairways, all of a sudden this is a bomber's paradise. That's the distinguishing mark here. Are we going to see fairways where even the short and the straight, or even the straight, are missing a high percentage of fairways? Because at that point, it's basically bomber city, bomb it as far as you can, like at Wingfoot, and because you've got a shorter high iron in your hand, you're going to gravitate up to the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, no, I get that. Short and accurate, if they're truly accurate, could work.
Yeah.
Yes, if short and the level of accuracy is being penalised with roll or whatever. I forget which major it was now. It must have been a US Open. I remember backing Francesco Molinari in a similar kind of scenario a few years back, thinking, well, look, he's relatively short, but his iron straight is going to be hitting so many fairways, he's going to be giving himself chances that other guys aren't. And the reality was, as soon as it started, he was finding himself in the rough. He was chopping out sideways all the time. Bogey, bogey, bogey.
Yeah, of course. This is it. Yeah. Where if those fairways are firm with limited roll, all of a sudden, the accurate sorts may have an advantage. Andy said to me on the podcast, and I think this is quite a good angle. He said he was going to basically pull up a list of 25 of the most of the accurate drivers and 25 of the bombers, and pick from. You've got to take a camp, take a side. What do you think? Or mix. So I've kind of done this. I've gone onto our predictor model, and I've come up with a list of. I'm not going to go through 25 names on each because that'd get a bit tedious. But I've brought out some notables. So top 25 for accuracy over the last 6 months, Paul, is that right? Driving accuracy.
Yeah, 6 months, and it covers all of the tours where there's accuracy is measured.
The top man, won't surprise you, it's Aaron Rye, Morikawa, Im, Straka, Connors Glover, Berger, Jordan Smith, interesting though, Henley, Nick Taylor, Victor Perez, Emiliano Griot, posted no idea. Matt McCarthy, JT Poston, Scotty Scheffler, boo hiss, Shane Lowry, he didn't do too badly here in 2016, Siwoo Kim, and let's go the other extreme, bombers, driving distance, well, number one, of course, Bryson, two, Nicklas Norgaard, three, McIlroy, then we've got Neiman, Rasmus Højgaard, Minwoo Lee, Chris Gotterup, Gary Woodland, Wyndham Clark, Cam Young, I think he could go well this week, Ludvig Åberg, Taylor Pendrith, Xander, Rahm, Davis Riley, Ben Arn. So there's two distinct camps there. Bombers versus short, accurate sorts.
Mm.
I've actually got four of my five selections across those two lists. I've kind of divvied my camp up. Long bombers and more accurate sorts that can grind on technical courses.
Yeah, now I get the logic. And I guess if there's a bomber who has a particularly good week in terms of their accuracy, then that, you know, going back to the antiquated total driving stat that we discussed on the preview pod, someone who's finding fairways and finding them a long way up this week is going to have the ultimate advantage, should they be able to do that. Not easy though around here. As you say, the fairways are tight and all of the challenges that will come from it being firming course as the course dries.
Are you kind of following the, are you with us on this logic, Barry?
Yeah, I kind of wish we had the exact state of affairs of the fairways right now on Tuesday morning. You know, in 48 hours' time, knew exactly where they were going to be, so we could put in some last-minute bets, but kind of have to take a little bit of... Feels like a little bit of a blended, a little bit of a blended model, but I still like targeting that 60%+ fairways, fairies and regulation percentage.
Mm. It'd be lovely.
That long, Steve. The course,
no, it's not.
It really isn't. And so the more times you aren't in that rough, like that, you're just removing. Who knows what it could end up being, like 3/4 of a shot at each hole. What it could be 1 1/4 shot each hole every time you go in the rough. So every time you're not in that rough, you're removing that risk of that happening. So trying to tend a bit more towards the accuracy of the tee and hoping it just doesn't turn into like a bomb gauge.
Mm.
But I don't think it will, because in Winged Foot, there were open entrances to the greens, whereas here, not as much. And if the greens are firm and running really fast, then controlling the ball out of that rough, even if you are getting into the green, is going to be a big issue.
Yeah,
and you're going to end up with the same rough problem around the greens or a bunker problem around the greens. So,
yeah,
I really hope they get it right. It sounds like they know it. Like, of all the courses that should have the balance correct, this and everything I've heard and read, it sounds like they're in that direction. So just fingers crossed.
Mm. No, I agree. I think the control from the rough to firm greens and trying to stay on the greens, but if you can, trying to stay, you know, under the hole, so you leave yourself a reasonable putt rather than one of these, you know, as we described earlier, 16++. Stimp downhill putts, then there's got to be a premium on that. And bomb and gouge, I can't believe it's going to allow you to do that with regularity. We'll see.
I've got a list here of doomed players that won't win this week. The reason they won't win is because they're with outside the top 25 of my strokes gained putting metric over the last 8 weeks. And as I've said on various majors, I can go back, I think it's over 3 years now, players always who win a major are in this kind of top 25 bracket, or they literally had a top 5 strokes gained putting performance the week before, the outing before. Here's a list of players not to back. I love doing this because it basically puts you up for ridicule. But why not? People want opinions. Oberg's on this list, so he can't win. Daniel Berger, thank Christ. Wyndham Clark, Corey Connors, amazingly. Tyrrell Hatton, Russell Henley, fantastic. Erasmus Højgaard, Sung Jae-im. Brooks Koepka, he's not winning another major, you won't be surprised to hear. Minwoo Lee, Shane Lowry's not winning. Robert McIntyre's not winning. Rory McIlroy's not winning. Taylor Pendrith, Aaron Rye, Davis Riley, Cam Smith's not even on it. He's putting. And Nick Taylor. None of those are going to win the US Open this week. Win the US Open. Don't. Oh, Steve, you said the. And Ludwig finished tied for eighth. Doesn't count.
Just imagine Steve's phone reads out tweets and messages in that voice to him. He's got in the settings just so he gets that.
That's default voice when you get a notification through on X.
That's kind of a bummer to hear Nick Taylor at the end, because he's kind of one of my outsider long shot fancies. But then again, yeah, who knows where the win equity's at, but yeah, in around what 150 to 1, 8 places, I'm kind of eyeing up somewhere at that. I might try get a few more places.
I'm not saying he won't play, so I'm just saying that won't win, but
I could see
Nick Taylor winning a Travelers next week. That feels like his jam, doesn't it? Travelers Championship. A week after a major, could see that.
Come through a flying final round. The only thing I'll say about putting is that DJ didn't putt fantastically back in 2016. He missed an awful lot of putts and gave himself an awful lot of chances, which of course helps if you're doing that. So if you're hitting enough greens and don't take all your chances but take just about enough, then that may be good enough. But I'll get your point. I think you need the whole package. Everything's got to be clicking if you're going to come and win what will be an incredibly testing major championship.
Right. I'm going to start running through the selections. So let's do this. First number I'm going to shout out here. This is the driving distance on arrival at the golf course of the winners of the US Open, excluding Brookline. Since Dustin Johnson's win here in 2016, Dustin Johnson was second for driving distance on the PGA Tour when he took this out. Brooks Koepka 7th, Brooks Koepka 8th, Gary Woodland 13th, Bryson DeChambeau 1st, John Rahm 19th, Wyndham Clark 7th. If you'd have merged LIV and PGA Tour stats together last year, Bryson DeChambeau was the longest driver. So, it won't surprise you to hear that my first tip is Bryson DeChambeau. I've gone win only, 15-2 with Betfred. I think if any course relates to this, it's probably Winged Foot. He said that in his video as he's walking around, dropping balls in places and pretending it was the fairway rough, which it clearly wasn't. But it would break my heart to have tipped him up at the PGA Championship at 11-1, and then he goes and wins the US Open, the major after, at this kind of price point. Can't back him each way. So I went 4 points win only. I got 15-2 with Betfred. And there was a lot of people backing him on first show on Monday. There was a lot of pressure on his price. I tell you, I just love the fact that they're playing this upstate. You just look at his record. 2 wins in Illinois, New Jersey, New York State, Massachusetts, Michigan, 2 in Ohio, 1 in West Virginia. This is where he does his best work. Course suits. He's never defended a title in his life, but if you're on him at the PGA, and let's be frank, he's probably the most backed player at the PGA, and of course then Scotty just wins. I think you've got to stick with him this week. So I'm sticking with him. 15-2 with Betfred. Win only on Bryson for me. Where do you guys chip in, chaps? Because my next selection's Shorty as well.
35's for me, and then the rest are all longer.
Barry? Oh,
Paul, have you assumed my identity? What's going on? That's fantastic. I'm not on Bryson. I'd almost forgotten about the defending angle until a couple of days ago, and that decided for me to not back him. I just think that's just that extra little weight on him. And so, I'm It's going to look like we're copying each other's homework, Steve, but more likely I'm copying your homework. But I'm on the same as your number two pick.
When I started to look at this 3 weeks ago, just starting to sort of amble around the subject, and we do the research preview, which needs research, clearly a time spent, it became clear that John Rahm plays great golf on courses where Dustin Johnson and, to a lesser extent, Angel Cabrera play good golf. And that kind of attracted me to him. And you mentioned in the research podcast, Barry, I mean, this is something you can go into. You genuinely think that John Rahm has got a bit of dog back in him, and I can see that. He wants to make some noise. And I watched a lot of the golf. The great thing with LIV is you can watch every shot via their leaderboard. And for the most part, John was hitting it long, relatively straight, and his greens in regulation play was fantastic last week in LIV Virginia. Interestingly enough, when you looked at the greens there, they were firm and releasing in the main, and those greens were full of poana. So as a warm-up for the US Open, I think LIV really did their homework. That golf course wasn't a bad, and the rough was pretty juicy as well. So I think that will have put the LIV players in a decent state this week, just to play a course that had poana in the greens, good firm releasing greens, and thick rough. I doubt if there was, clearly that had all been sorted out way in advance, but Rahm's just played. The other thing that got me with Rahm is, if you actually go back to the PGA Championship, he was really, after Bryson cocked up Saturday evening, Rahm was the only guy that really made a charge on Sunday. And he got within one early on in the back nine. Then Scheffler made a couple of birdies, pulled away. And even at the end, Rahm, you could tell, he was just desperate. He wasn't playing for second. He knew that he had to go, it was high risk golf, and it caught him out. You know, two doubles and a bogey to finish. Still finishing the top 10. I just think Rahm is made for this golf course. It's all gone quiet.
I'm just letting that sit there because it's it could be quite poignant come Sunday. I feel like he's just got that extra level of motivation in him. Wants to prove a point. I love that. Yeah, he said he's got his prickliness back, which is good. Saw a couple of spicy F-bombs from him after a drive on social media. I think the timing coalesces with a bit of rumbling about LIV and players possibly leaving LIV after their contracts expire. And he's just sitting there wondering, geez, am I really screwed up here? I gotta show them something. So it's the mental motivation was sits on top of the good golf. So
just out of interest, I'm on. When do those contracts expire? That's something I haven't come across. Is it this end of this year?
They'll all vary, won't they?
I think there's one or two popping in this year. Yeah.
Any names? Going to be spicy
not
at the end of this year, then,
not
isn't
off
it?
The top of my head. Yeah, I think there's more of the bigger ones next year, but guess it'll give us something to talk about after the Ryder Cup.
Oh, that'll be good, right? Cameron Tringali back on the PGA Tour. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Brendan Steele. They'll be welcomed back with open arms, I'm sure. Do you know one number that really grabbed me with Rahm? He played here as amateur in 2016. He started with a 76, six over par. He then shot 69, 72, 70 as an amateur. So for the final 54 holes, he shot one over par, 211. That was the ninth best last 54 holes in the field. As an am. He finished 23rd. So,
yeah,
I mean, impressive. That is, that to me just shows, I mean, that shows that Rahm could go really well this week. And I think he's got the mojo back. You can just see it. I think he's simmering. And it's Ryder Cup year. So, yeah, I'm in on Rahm. 12-1 I got with Betfred. 8 places each way, 50 odds. Thank you, Betfred, for that. Go through your 30-1 shot, Paul.
Yeah, well, 35s is. Actually, it's on your... Actually, is on your list, of players that isn't going to win.
Is in the accurate? Oh, is he? Oh, right. I thought you meant on the accuracy or the direct or the driving distance.
No, it was in the can't putt, so won't win category.
Oh no. But, who are you getting? You're not going to say Ludwig Åberg?
No, I'm not. No, no, no. I've gone for Shane Lowry, 35-1 with 8 places. I've gone for the top of the market. I can see the logic from you with Bryson. I can see the logic from both of you with John Rahm. I can see Scotty just winning the tournament by a country mile if he takes to the course straight away and plays really well. And if that's the case, then everyone is playing for each way money. And I can't play at those really short prices when we could just be playing for a chop of a place. It just, I couldn't go there. So anyway, that's why I've started my team a little bit further down. Shane Lowry, 35-1, I thought was a reasonably, the right kind of price, I think. He's been teetering on the edge of something big for a while, and we've talked about this in various pods, and he's just hasn't quite put it all together, but we saw at Pebble, he was second there, played really well. Second at the Truist. First for strokes gained approach and first for strokes gained tee to green at the Truist was the number that really caught my attention. And then a bit of progressive form recently, 23rd Memorial, 13th last week at the Canadian Open. And he hit the front at the Canadian Open on Sunday, started the final round like a train. Was he 5-under through 4, I think he was. And then dropped away and couldn't maintain that for the rest of the tournament. You know, in hindsight, given the number that he'd got to after just a few holes of the first round, had he been able to post a score from there, then he'd have stood a really good chance of winning the tournament. But probably felt that he needed to go even lower and couldn't quite go that far. But the only thing that's the downside, and you highlighted it, is the putter, which has been generally a little bit negative. But his long game is really, really good. And I think if we look back at DJ in 2016, and I've already said he missed an awful lot of putts, I think someone who can grind out fairways, grind out greens this week, give themselves chances, take as many as they reasonably can, but don't have to putt lights out, could well be in the mix. And talking 2016, I mean, Shane couldn't, perhaps should have won that tournament here. He was clear going into Sunday, gave the lead back, got back into a tie for the lead, didn't he? And then DJ just pulled away in the final nine. So demons to exercise, I think, from his chance that he had here. Major champion since that point in time. And it's been a long time since he's won a solo US-based event of any description. Of course, he won the Zurich Classic with Rory last year, but he's the kind of character that puts that right, I think. All of the talk with Shane is going to be on Portrush in a few weeks' time, and perhaps he's just a little bit under the radar this week and could go out there and do something special.
Definitely anyway, under the radar. And I tell you what, he is sandwiched in the data golf rankings between Patrick Cantlay and Corey Connors. And of those three, I'd back Lowry every single time.
Mm.
And we've said on this podcast multiple times, you look at when he wins, it's never off a top 10.
Yeah.
It's always off patchy-ish form. He normally goes close in a couple of off-colour performances, and then bang, win. He's in exactly that patch right now.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I think he knows he's playing some really good golf, and probably just frustrated that it isn't quite all coming together. But I think 1 week it will. 1 week soon, this week maybe.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be nice. Shame for you this week, Barry.
I don't know. I'm seeing what you guys are seeing. It's hard to, each week and each kind of chance that he seems to, or position he gets himself into, you're like, okay, here we go. Let's do it this week. And that doesn't happen. And that seems to be a repeating pattern. And I wonder if Shane of old, I mean, the question mark is there. Like, does he go and do this thing that we've knew he was capable of when he did have that pattern and go and win? So that's the 35-1 question this week.
Mm. Yep.
But I'm seeing a lot of Sunday, just a lot of, it's not even Sunday as well, just gets into situations. You're like, all right, here we go. Connect yourself right to the top of the leaderboard and just fades away. Not a good pattern.
Perhaps he puts it right this week.
Could well do. And you might FOMO me into putting a little bet on him on the exchange just in case.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just having a stretch. Apologies. I'm actually priming myself because I haven't been able to say this for a long week, long, long time. I'm on Wacky Neiman this week. Do you know what, chaps? Wacky Neiman is now, according to Data Golf, the fifth best player in the world. Let that sink in.
Well, when you keep winning, it's going to elevate you up the charts, isn't it?
He's 79th in the official world golf rankings. Let's throw them in the bin. He's fifth in the real golf rankings, the Data Golf rankings. He's now climbed above Justin Thomas, Tommy Fleetwood, who's seventh, heaven forbid, and Colin Morikawa. I do wish that these guys, and I know people go, yeah, but they chose to take the money. I do wish that we just saw the top people playing golf together far more than just four times a year. It's a crime. It's a crime to us golf lovers, punters and viewers. It's an absolute crime. Because then we'd actually be able to tell if Wacky Neiman was the fifth best player in the world, because we'd actually see him competing against all of the other best players in the world far more regularly.
Yeah.
Anyway, you mentioned the trend, Paul. Five of the last six have been in the top eight at the PGA Championship the major before.
Mm-hmm.
He ticks that box. He ticks the box in terms of driving distance because... I equated him to being, I think he'd be like in the top five if you merged the two driving distance metrics together across LIV and PGA. He's clearly in the top four on the model, so that's good enough. This guy, it's phenomenal what he's actually been doing. And yeah, he's playing on a exhibition tour, I get that. But in his last 35 starts, he's won eight titles. That's a 23% success rate. And he's won five of his last 12. And that includes a couple of Asian tour events. So yeah, I know it's at a substandard. Get that. He's on a 42% success rate at the moment.
Mm.
And do you know what? I've looked at courses that might correlate. Courses where Cabrera's played well. Courses where DJ's played well. Courses where Jim Furyk, who was a local man. A man said this on a YouTube comment. He said, don't, in a way with Furyk, he was playing with a cheat code because he was a local Pennsylvania guy that played Oakmont hundreds of times. But it still suggests that short, accurate sorts can contend around it, because Jim Furyk was the ultimate one of those. But Neiman ticks a hell of a lot of boxes. He won his maiden PGA Tour title at TPC Old Wye in West Virginia at Greenbrier. That was a golf course that Angel Cabrera won a rare PGA Tour title on. And I'll never forget the time in 2022 when he obliterated an absolutely major championship quality Genesis Invitational at Riviera Country Club. And he went out there on a tough golf course on Thursday and shot something crazy like a 7-under par. And no one could get anywhere near him throughout the 72 holes.
Yeah.
He's also, his last two wins have been on greens that have a level of Poana within them. One of them, one of your old stomping grounds, Paul, Chapultepec, where they used to play the WGC.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He won there. And he won last week in Virginia on another golf course that was riddled with Poana. And in the end, I'm just looking at players and I just thought, do you know what? Just go. He's ticking a lot of boxes. And a lot of people say, oh, his game won't suit. He doesn't hit it high enough and he's no good in May. Well, let's see. Let's just see how he goes this week. He doesn't know himself. He said that in an interview. He said, I'm going there with totally open expectations, but I do know that I am feeling more and more comfortable in these kind of higher echelons of golf. He said that in an interview post-winning. Bearing in mind, he's beating Bryson, he's beating John Rahm, he's beating some very good players on the LIV Tour when they're contending with him. So yeah, I took the plunge. I'm on Joaquin Neiman. I got 2 points each way, 30-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way on Neiman.
Yeah. No, I get that. He's that was a bit of a career breakthrough, that top 10 at the PGA. And you look at his historic major championship form and record, and it's one of those that you're looking and go, well, he's just never managed to perform at the majors, and you almost put a line through him at the number you were being offered. But
yeah, agreed.
Yeah, seems to have taken a step forward. So it will be interesting to see how he plays and how he fares.
His US Open form isn't brilliant. He missed the cut on his first outing, but I did note that he was 23rd at Wingfoot, and I think he's gone 3 or 4 US Opens without missing the cut. So I don't know. There's something in there, but he does play golf courses where players that have won here and had success here have also had great results. I mean, Dustin Johnson around Riviera, I think he's won there, but there was it's a litany of seconds and thirds.
Hmm.
He ranked 4th in the predictor model as well when I pulled that together on Monday.
Well, he's got the form, hasn't he? As you say, he keeps winning, and that winning mentality, that winning bug isn't to be sniffed at, I don't think.
Now, Barry, I think you're on my 4th selection.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take the listeners through your rationale for that?
Well, I could lead up with some stats. If I said to you that he's 2nd in strokes gained total for the season, 4th in strokes gained tee to green, 41st in strokes gained off the tee, which is good considering he does not hit it that far, 3rd in strokes gained approach, 17th in strokes gained putting. His only weakness is strokes gained around the green. I think that almost might be negated a bit this week because everybody's going to have a tough time around the greens.
Mm. Yeah.
So I love Sepp Straka this week.
Yeah.
11th in driving accuracy. So 68.5% of fairways. And I think if they're a little bit soft this week, then that's an achievable, or maybe you can get close to that percentage with the pressure of the major championship and whatnot going on. And that gives him plenty of chances to let that iron play sing.
Hmm.
Here you go. These numbers are pretty... I've got no rhyme or reason for these, but listen to this. Data golf ranking of US Open winners. 2024, DeChambeau, 10. 2023, Wyndham Clark, 11. 2022, Fitzpatrick, 10. 10, 11, 10. Rahm was first, boo. 2020, DeChambeau was 12th. And Gary Woodland was 20th in 2019. That's pretty crazy. A 10th and 11th, a 10th and a 12th in the last 4 of the last 5. Data Golf rankings right now, Sepp Straka, 10th. Patrick Cantlay, 11th. And Paul, Shane Lowry, 12th.
There you go.
And in the form you're in, I can almost see this Shane Lowry victory by 7. I'm not sure. I can see us being up till 5 in the morning watching an endless playoff that never dies.
He may need to be leading by 7 to survive the Sunday.
Those numbers are uncanny, though. And we've already mentioned the fact, you know, it's just uncanny stuff, really. 10th, 10th, 11th and 12th, four of the last five. And then, of course, they urinate in your cornflakes, and John Rahm won and he was number one. Oof. Scotty Scheffler. We've got to get Scotty beat this week, guys. So, yeah, I'm on Sepp Straka as well. Regulars were now. I actually backed him about 3 weeks ago at 60s on the machine. I've topped that up with a bit of each way, 35 to 1 with Bet365. I'm left with one. He is 66 to 1. Does that come... Are you in between there, Paul? Or are you even higher than that?
I'm on the same one as you, and then I've got three long shots.
Okay, well, take listeners through Harris English.
Yeah, I'll start us off because I forget whether Barry's backed him as well, but we talked about Harris English a lot on the preview pod, and just one of those names that kept popping up, didn't he? Every angle we looked at, every angle we discussed, and every list we read through kept coming back to Harris English as being one of those players that you needed to consider. And I don't think we're alone, because when we recorded the preview pod last Thursday, he was 125 to 1 and he'd been banked into... When the final markets were formed, he was generally about 80s, and if you get an extended places now, 66s is likely to be the best you're going to get. But I think he's got a chance of placing. I think he's got a chance of getting in that top 8, top 10, however you choose to play it.
I think so.
12th at the Masters, 2nd at the PGA Championship at the last major, won the Farmers Insurance Open, of course. And 12th last time out at the Memorial. He's playing some really tidy stuff. And whilst he probably isn't going to be the first name off your lips when you're talking who's going to win the US Open, I think he's got the game and the ability to seriously contend this week. And, you know, you said we've got to try and get Scotty beat, and that is going to be the challenge. But should he not win, then I wouldn't be surprised to see a name like a Harris English right in the mix there, challenging for that title. We'll see.
We mentioned Plantation Course as a great course in terms of uneven fairways and that kind of malarkey. DJ's won there. Jim Furyk's won there. I think Cabrera played there irregularly, had a top 10 there. Wacky Neiman's finished second there in a playoff in the past. Harris English has won at Kapalua 2021. Also, River Highlands, DJ's won there at the Travellers. Jim Furyk had a fourth there, I think. English first at Travellers as well. TPC Poston was another one. DJ won there by 6 in 2020. Cabrera had a top 4 there. Second, Harris English to Scheffler, not to Scheffler, to DJ in that particular outing. That, unfortunately, was the one where Scheffler shot 59 as well. So I do, there's also that top 10 at Olympia Fields. We think we referenced Olympia Fields with DJ losing there in a playoff to John Rahm. So there's a lot of correlation with English and a lot of these courses. I do like him this week. Do like him. He's not outstanding at anything, but top 45 for driving accuracy, top 40 for bogey avoidance, top 30 for scrambling outside of 30 yards. I think that's going to be important. And top 20 for 3-putt avoidance on the PGA Tour. I mean, how vital is that going to be?
Yeah, you're going to have to make some decent return putts this week. Those 4, 5, 6 footers you're gonna have with some regularity, particularly if you leave yourself the wrong side of the holes. So yeah, not a bad stat.
So I'm done. English Sepp Straka, Wacky Neiman, John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. Over to you two to close the selections.
Well, I've got three long shots that I've put in an article on the site. Did anything from you, Barry, before I rattle through those?
No, I have a little bit of English as well from the exchange last week. I'm still kind of figuring out my way to get the each ways on the guys, or if I want to add an each way and just leave, I might just leave it at the exchange. So, Nick Taylor, I think I'll have a bit of that each way. I think I can get about 100 to 110 places. And otherwise, nobody's super popped for me right now, and I haven't read your article, so this is going to come as a nice surprise, and I may just piggyback them all, Paul. So let's hear it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say, you know, about how to play it this week, because yeah, you could just go for a monster price on the exchange and see if you can trade out, couldn't you, and go that way, or pick as many places as you possibly can. There's without Scotty markets out there. So if, as a punter, if you're really concerned that Scotty's just going to mop up, then you could just take him out of the equation entirely and go down that route. I've put three players up who are 100 to 1 or more with extended places, so generally 7 or 8 places. But again, yeah, you could choose to play it however you like. The three that I've backed are Tony Finau, who he hasn't quite hit the heights of 22, 23 when he was winning a lot. He won 4 times in fairly quick succession, didn't he, back then? But there's been a few signs of life recently. And I think, you know, despite some challenges and despite not being at the top of his form, I think he's got the game for major championships still. And I think that's borne out from the fact that he's got 11 top 10s at majors over the years. 7 of those were top 8 finishes, which is encouraging for this bet, because I've backed him 8 places each way, 100 to 1 with bet 365. 3 of those top 8s were at the US Open, and one of those was last year at Pinehurst number 2, where he finished 3rd. So he's got a good pedigree, I think, at this level in this type of tournament. 6th into Sunday at the Truist recently, 8th into Sunday at the USPGA Championship. So he's been there or thereabouts over the quite recent past. And of course, there's no water on this course, Steve, is there? So that should give him a really good
even
chance.
Even the ditches don't have water. They just have like 18-inch thick strawy stuff.
Yeah.
But no water.
I went through... I was seriously considering. I went back through your description of the course and looked at the water feature 0 point and thought, yep, that's it.
Tony, he does like his Poana, doesn't he, Tony?
Yeah. The putting will be the... Again, but I refer back to DJ and the fact, you know, DJ was never the best putter. And I think if you can find a way to find lots of fairways, lots of greens this week, just take the odd chance, grind out the rest of it, I think you could be in the mix this week. So yeah, happy with Finau. Akshay Bhatia I've backed at 125. Again, 8 places, and that was with Bet Frid, this one. And we discussed in the research pod, actually, how good this has been for, or this event has been for major championship maidens, with 12 of the last 16, I think we quoted, US Open champions getting their first major championship into the bargain. So someone like Bhatia, someone like Tony Finau securing their first major championship wouldn't surprise me massively. His best in this event was 16th last year, and I think he's got the ability to improve on that. He was 3rd at TPC Sawgrass earlier in the season, so that's the big standout result of the season at the most elite level. But then it's the progressive form that he's shown recently which interests me most. And I remember picking up his win at the Valero Texas Open last year, because he'd progressed from 17th, 11th, then win from his 3 starts prior to that. And that was very similar to the form that he won off the back of when he won the Barracuda Championship the year before, 35th, 9th win. So he's coming into this off the back of 22nd at Colonial and then 16th last time out at the Memorial. So again, nice progressive form. He was prominent in both. He was in far better positions in both. And then there was just the odd round, either the final round or the Saturday round, that just derailed him in both of those events. But outside of that, there was some really nice stuff. So again, I think there's just something percolating with Akshay Bhatia at the moment. So happy to take an each-way punt on him. And the final one is Patrick Reed, who I make no excuses for going back to the well with Patrick Reed. 125-1 is available. 7 each-way with Unibet. There's 5 or 6 different firms out there offering 7 places each-way, 125-1 right now as we record. So different options out there. And third at the Masters, as we know, when we were on board him in this kind of segment, this longer price segment, three putted the 13th, as you'll remember, from 3 feet, and ultimately lost by 2 that week, which when you do the final analysis of it was just pretty galling, because he had a great chance if he'd have made that 3-footer. Talking of Augusta, who's a winner there, of course, DJ, Angel Cabrera, both of them got green jackets, and the last two winners here at Oakmont over the last two US Opens held here. So that's a nice little correlation. 8 top 10s at the majors over the years, 4th in this event back in 2018. And if Captain America is going to make it through to Keegan Bradley's team at the Ryder Cup, he's got to perform this week. I think he's got to perform at Portrush in a month's time. So I think the focus for him is going to be very much on performance this week. He's got the magic beans around the greens as well, been hitting lots of greens in regulation. There's just so much to like with Patrick Reed. And I was on him at the Masters. I think a number of us were on him at the PGA Championship, missed the cut, of course. I'll give him another chance here. 125-1 seems like a fair price to me. So my team, just to reiterate them, Reed, Bhatia, Tony Finau, and then Harris English, Shane Lowry as my 5, and desperately hoping that Scotty does not win.
Barry, what do you think Patrick Reed would need to do to get on Keegan Bradley's Ryder Cup team?
I think he needs to win a major.
So do I. I think he needs to win both the Open and the US Open.
that's hard.
I think he needs to make it so that Keegan looks ridiculous if he doesn't pick him.
Yeah, but he didn't get invited to their dinner, did he? Don't want you, Patrick.
Well, if he wins this week, that asks a hell of a question.
Oh yeah, to be fair, if he wins a major, as Barry said, if he didn't get picked a captain's pick, it would be embarrassing for Bradley, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's like Keegan Bradley. The only way he gets into his own team is if he finishes in the top 6.
Yeah, and quite rightly too. He should never even...
He can't pick himself, can he?
No.
Have you noticed, Barry, I haven't gone anywhere near Keegan Bradley this week, even though his stats look quite good.
I'm proud of you, Steve.
Thanks.
Good. Good for you. Next stop, posted note of doom. When you do slip back and back him and he fails you, then you can properly nail him onto the posted note.
It's going to be tempting, isn't it, at the Travellers next week? That is Keegan Bradley's course.
Might be tempting to see what when we see the tee times, because he does like a fast start, Keegan Bradley. Perhaps the first round lead market could be where we pick him up. Have to see.
Any more for any more? We done?
No, that's me.
Well, I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Best of luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to listeners. Best of luck with all your one and done, your bets, all of your DraftKings teams and whatever. We've given you plenty of food for thought. Don't forget the Scotty Scheffler boost with Bet365, where he's currently 13-4. So that is available if you are a Scotty Scheffler is going to win this truther. I think we all genuinely are, but we're just trying to find a way to get him beaten. So that's the way it is with us. I hope Everything goes well. Enjoy the US Open. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf.